Our connection this hour will be made on the day that restaurants in Rochester and Pittsford and Gates and Geneva and everywhere can reopen for sit-down service. Will customers return? Will families go out to eat? What kind of impact should we expect? The word reopening is not fully accurate in this case because almost certainly restaurants will have limitations in what they can do. They might have limited seating capacity, maybe half full, maybe less. Servers are likely to wear PPE, including masks. The experience will be different. Will you go out to eat? That doesn't mean everyone agrees on what's going to happen. Talk to some restaurant owners. They'd rather stay closed to sit-down service, focusing only on takeout during the pandemic. Others would welcome any limited sit-down traffic they can get. Gabrielle Hamilton is the owner of a restaurant called Prune in Manhattan. She wrote a piece for the New York Times called, "My Restaurant Was My Life for 20 Years. Does the World Need It Anymore?" In this piece, Hamilton writes that the restaurants have been operating on very thin margins for years, hers, but so many others across New York State and across the country, and that's well before this pandemic. And now many will not survive it. Some won't have the money to survive it, of course. But Hamilton also wonders if customers will come back in the same numbers even when this is over. She writes, quote, "Prune is a cramped and lively bistro in Manhattan's East Village with a devoted following and a tight-knit crew. I opened it in 1999. It has only 14 tables, which are jammed in so close together that not infrequently you put down your glass of wine to take a bite of your food and you realize it's on your neighbor's table. Many friendships have started this way. If COVID-19 is the death of restaurants in New York, will we be able to tell which restaurants went belly up because of the virus? I started my restaurant as a place for people to talk to one another with a very decent but affordable glass of wine and an expertly prepared plate of simply braised lamb shoulder on the table to keep the conversation flowing and I've ran it as long as I could this way. If this kind of place is not relevant to society, then it and we should become extinct," end quote. So what's next? Our guests will help us navigate this difficult discussion. Let me welcome them now. Janine Cachette is the owner of Avino Restaurant in Rochester. Janine, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hello to Jonathan Swan, the owner of the Swan family of restaurants. It includes Oxenstone, Swan Dive, Daily Refresher, Dorado, Rue, and Vern's. John, welcome. How are you?
I'm well, thank you for having me, Evan.
Well, thanks for being with us. And Chris Grocki is a restaurant consultant. He is a veteran of many of the most successful projects in town, and he's the owner of the historic German House in Rochester South Wedge. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Well, let me just start with all three of you to kind of give me the lay of the land as you see it. John, since your portfolio is probably the largest at the table, I'll start with you. And I know, there are different properties, but generally speaking here, what are you doing with your properties, whether they're fully closed, whether you're doing takeout, and then how do you see what reopening might mean, and are you hoping for that in terms of even limited sit-down seating?
Yeah, so all my venues are actually pretty different in size, and they all have their unique sets of difficulties when dealing with this whole crisis. So Oxenstone, the biggest one, probably the most notable to everyone, is just closed. There's no way I can see any way to turn any kind of profit or anything in that place. Some of them are actually well suited for this kind of thing, with Swan Dive being probably the most notable there. We're doing some takeout and even some delivery on the weekends, and we plan on expanding those offerings in the coming weeks. And then the others down on Park Avenue, we're kind of doing a collaborative thing, just trying to unite forces. And it's literally my mom, my two sisters, myself, and then my one sister's infant baby coming in to cook all the food and coordinate the pickups every day. So, or not every day, every day that we're open at least. So we plan on expanding this. I don't think it's very practical in any regard for any of the restaurants to be opening at reduced occupancy from a profitability standpoint. From a relevance standpoint, you have to kind of open to stay competitive and stay on the tip of people's thoughts when people consider going out to eat. You want to be in those thoughts. So I think you can't just do nothing either. So we're just really caught in a really bad situation here.
Hmm. Janine, as the owner of Avino, take me through what you've been doing there.
So when we had the order, I think it was March 14th and 15th, to go to 50% capacity. We did. We removed half of our tables, chairs, and we saw sales plummet about 50% just from that weekend. So we have a little bit of, you know, a small snapshot of what that would look like if that was the model moving forward. And it's definitely not a sustainable model because our fixed costs are not cut in half. And frankly, payroll to whether we do 50 dinners a night or 100 dinners a night, it's pretty similar. You still need a dishwasher and a host and a bartender. You still need a certain number of people to make that happen. So the costs just don't make sense. So after we were forced to shut down, we've been doing takeout since day one. No contact takeout. We have, you know, all of our doors are locked. We have a table out front. Call in the order. You pay for it over the phone. We do three pickups every 15 minutes. Again, it defeats the purpose to have 20 people in the parking lot waiting for food. So it's a very limited, very, very controlled method. It helps us inside that we can do it with just a few people as well. And so when you get your pickup time, if it's 5:15, you go outside at 5:15, you wait outside at 5:15, you call the restaurant, we put a bag outside with your name on it, we shut the door, you come pick up your bag and you move on, we sanitize the table for the next order. So we're doing that four nights a week. It's helping pay the few staff that we have on. We do have about six people left on payroll, so it's paying that. It's paying people's health insurance, even if they're on unemployment. RG&E, just a couple of the bigger bills to, like, literally keep the lights on. But moving forward, I don't know what we're going to do. A big portion of our business is weddings and catering and events, and we don't know for the foreseeable future if we'll be able to do that. We also have a private dining room that holds large groups. That's a big chunk of our business on a nightly basis, and if we can't do that. So the whole landscape of this restaurant is changing.
Chris, let me bring you into the conversation. We talked a little bit this past weekend, and you had some very interesting things to say about what you suspect might happen if there is a partial reopening. And again, what we're all assuming here is that if restaurants get the green light for dine-in, sit-down service, that will come with limitations on capacity seating, on what, you know, how servers have to probably wear PPE, different stuff here. And you had this idea that, you know, maybe people feel pent up and that first week they might go out. But, you know, I know you've got some thoughts about what that evolution of the business and the reservations and the bookings might look like. Take me through that.
Yeah, and all of this, I guess, is just a completely an assumption and maybe a best guess for what we're looking at. Like John and Janine said, we're not exactly sure what's going to happen, I guess, in the coming weeks. I mean, nobody here is advocating for any sort of premature opening, for sure. This is one of those things that New York has proven, and we just listened to the governor, again, kind of giving us a nice rundown of all the facts. We're going to take this on a very metered basis, right? And so when restaurants are allowed to reopen, and we see that those regulations have been relaxed, and it's very important to consider that these regulations will not be lifted wholesale altogether. You can already see in Texas, in Tennessee, in Georgia, there are restrictions that are in Tennessee and Texas's place, you know, about to happen, where up to 75% of the dining rooms will be closed, 50% in terms of Tennessee. I think we are going to, you know, continue to see people play it safe up to a certain point, and then people will really want to explode back onto the scene. And we are going to have to manage that volume and make sure that everybody is kept safe. I also think that there's a chance that if we don't manage that correctly, that people will be afraid when they see crowds, when they go back out to, and they'll be willing to sit down for another few weeks and say, I don't want to deal with any of that.
So obviously I think it's fair to note it's all speculation, but those are very interesting points here. You're putting the emphasis, Chris, on making the diners feel as comfortable as possible. But do you have any expectation, Chris, that if we got the green light next week, no restrictions, open as you did before, do you think most restaurants could get the same kind of bookings that they did in February?
Well, first of all, it's important to remember they won't be allowed to have the same bookings.
I know.
In February.
I know. I'm just saying, like, in a world where reopening meant fully reopened, there are no rules, it's up to the public and it's up to the restaurants, could you even get people out, you think?
In the hypothetical that this happens in 1 or 2 weeks from now, no. We don't see people, you know, jump back into the restaurant scene. We have to wait until most people feel comfortable. Out of the entire population, there is a subset of people that go out to eat regularly. And out of that particular group, there is a subset of them that is starting to feel pent up already. I think if you released all of these restrictions right now, you would see some of those people immediately go back and say, I want to be in the dining room. I want life to feel normal. But you would see most of those people say, I'm going to wait until I feel more comfortable, see what happens, listen to the news, listen to the reporting, watch the press conferences, the infection rate, and kind of hedge their bets a little bit on when they're going to feel safe to go back. And that's a curve that'll change the further we get out.
Yeah, and so if you're just joining us, we're talking to three veterans of the dining scene and the hospitality scene in Rochester, and we're looking at what happens in a phased reopening for restaurants all across this country, but right here in Western New York. That's going to happen eventually, could happen next month, could happen in June. And then the question becomes, what are you willing to do as diners? In a moment, I'll read the flood of emails and comments on social media we have. You know, varying views that our listeners have about whether they're willing to go out to eat right now, whether they would go out in the middle of a pandemic pre-vaccine, and, you know, just their thoughts on that. We'll get to that coming up here. But let me hit John and Janine on some of the points Chris is making here. And I want to stress this here, John. In fact, maybe what I'll do is let me read a little bit more from the piece on Prune in the New York Times, in which the owner of Prune in Manhattan had this to say about margins. Because I think her concern is that the public is hearing reopening and they think, oh, good, well, things will be fine soon for restaurants. You get to open again. Here's what she writes on margins. Quote, Prune at 20 years old just barely banks about exactly what it needs each week to cover expenses. I've joked for years that I'm in the nonprofit sector, but that has been more direly true now for several years. There used to be enough extra money every year that I could close for 10 days in July to repaint and retile and rewire the restaurant, but it has become increasingly impossible to leave even a few days of revenue on the table. The conversation about how restaurants will continue to operate, given the rising costs of running them, has been ramping up for years now. The coronavirus did not suddenly shine light on an unknown fragility. We've all known, and for a rather long time. The past 5 or 6 years have been alarming. For restaurants, coronavirus-mandated closures are like the oral surgery or appendectomy you suddenly face while you are uninsured. These closures will take out the weakest and the most vulnerable, but exactly who among us are the weakest and most vulnerable is not yet obvious. End quote. Now, I know she's in Manhattan. Costs are different there. Here we are in Rochester, a little bit of a different scene. But how much of that rings true about what the public needs to know about how tough things are and how tight margins can be even when things are not in a pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's pretty widely known that the restaurant profit margins aren't great. You know, I mean, I don't have a lot of sympathy for that. We all know we got into restaurants for the most part because we love cooking or we love social environments, and it's not always about the money, to be perfectly honest. But I think that given the way, you know, the big support that came out for, you know, small business and restaurants that was supposedly, you know, our lifeline, the PPP loan that some of us were lucky enough to get, I guess you could call it lucky. I'm a recipient of the PPP loan, and it just kind of makes it puts us in a weird scenario where when we try to go back to even to bite into the scenario where we could reopen, well we can't, because who are we going to hire? Okay, so hire back the employees we laid off. That seems like a good idea. Oh wait, we can't because they're making more now than they ever did before the pandemic happened on unemployment insurance. And yes, that ends in July 31, but oh wait, the PPP loan forces you to use this money within an 8-week period. Well, that 8 weeks will run out in somewhere middle of June, depending on when you get your money. So you've got this weird 6-week window where, okay, so you hired your back, now you're just going to go back on unemployment, I guess. So you're going to stay with us because you know that you got all this money on the other side. It's a very, very tough spot. So the profit margins are tough. That's why I think it's an impossible premise to expect to operate at any sort of profit when you have that handicap of limited occupancy. It's just not It's not possible. I can't even imagine. I mean, it's gonna be extremely costly for me as an individual. That's for sure. If we want to keep our doors open, and we have to, you know, this is why we do this. We love this. We want to keep people employed as best we can, but it's just gonna be really difficult.
Well, the Swan family of restaurants includes Oxenstone, Swan Dive, Daily Refresher, Dorado, Rue, Vern's. Do you expect all of those to survive this pandemic?
Yeah, I think we, you know, as a group, we've been very fortunate. And in the last couple of years, we've been popular restaurants and busy, and we've been responsible with our resources. And, you know, we're family run. Whatever we make, if you come to one of our restaurants 1 year, it's probably going to look a little bit different the next year. And that's because we're constantly reinvesting in these things. And we kind of look at these restaurants as extensions of ourselves. Truly, this might sound weird, but if they close, I think like a piece of me would die. I'm going to stay open. I think we'll survive. I think generally speaking, human beings are, you know, resilient. You know, the plague happened, depression happened, all these things happen. People go back to normal. If you ask me about the premise of a 2 week window where all of a sudden we're just open, full, no holds barred, I think all the restaurants would be flooded. That's my take. I think that, just because I really do think people are pent up. I know there's a subset of people that are going to be cautious, and you know, you should be, but I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's people are people. You know, you want to feel normal. You want to socialize. And that restaurants are one of the best places to do it in.
Mm-hmm. Talking to John Swan, Janine Cachette is the owner of Avino. So, Janine, give me a sense for how it has been for you at Avino in terms of getting that takeout business. I mean, I think a lot of people who are ordering takeout right now are, number one, ordering takeout from restaurants they've always loved and appreciate the food that you prepare, but also because they want to support as much as they can. How much support? I mean, I'm not going to ask you to open your books to us right here, but I'm wondering, you know, generally speaking, when you talk to other restaurant owners, how much is the takeout scene a kind of bridge for you during this time?
So we're bringing in about 25 to 28% of what we would normally bring in on any given week, which, like I said, is not sustainable, but for us, it's better than nothing, especially with a very a skeleton crew and just really watching our costs. We've seen a tremendous amount of support from the community, people buying gift cards, people buying food for hospital workers, people it's been really tremendous, but it's still not enough to keep us alive for a long period of time.
So let's say there's an opening maybe June 1st and you've got a limit of 50% capacity. What does that do to your margins?
It will be about 50%, especially, again, for us, events and events are a big part of our business. So if we can't, we've had to reschedule all of our weddings for April, May, and June. We're keeping our July ones on the books for now, but I have a feeling those will have to be moved, especially seeing that all these festivals and such have moved.
I guess I'm asking, does it work for you anything more than a short term? I mean, if you've got to be open the duration of a pandemic at 50%, does the Avino stay open until sometime in 2021 at 50% capacity?
I think we would stay open. I think we would have to take out a very big loan, honestly, and in combination with some of the revenue we're bringing in to sustain ourselves. There's no way to do it otherwise without really, really getting in debt. There's still fixed costs to pay. So I think in combination, we did get the PPP loan, and I think we're taking out a pretty hefty EIDL loan as well, which can be paid off in 20 years. So hopefully that will kind of get us through the next, you know, year until we can get back to whatever normal means.
Okay.
But John's absolutely right with we don't have any employees. Nobody wants to come back to work because they're making $1,100 to be on unemployment till July 31st. There's a major deficiency in this bill.
Hmm. And Chris, I'm curious to know if you agree with Gabrielle Hamilton's overview of the restaurant industry, not just in New York City, but the restaurant industry writ large, that her diagnosis is in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been sort of a glut. Margins have always been thin, but they've become razor thin, and that this is only exposing a problem that already existed as opposed to really creating a brand new problem. What do you make of that, Chris?
Well, I don't think there's any question as to whether or not that's absolutely correct. I mean, you've got an industry full of people that very beautifully just want to serve and bring joy, and they have found a way to make it work financially. But to John's point, you know, it's not always about the money. There is a financial reality to all this, of which these guys are very aware. And, yeah, it's when you are allowed to continue to operate without that safety net, you know, you find a way to make it work. In an incredibly competitive business where you've got diners all the time saying, you know, I'm not going to pay an extra dollar for that drink. I'm not going to pay an extra dollar for that dish. We hear these things in dining rooms. We take this to heart. You tell a service-oriented person, like, you know, this hurts me and I don't want to pay this much, they're going to take that criticism and they're going to say, what can I do to thin my margins a little bit in order to be able to please these people and make them come back to my restaurant and not have cost be a concern? It's time to shift the responsibility a little bit back on the diners. And I'm glad I get to talk about this in the abstract right now instead of, you know, kind of shilling for a particular place, because the industry is really important to me as a whole, and we need to be able to vocalize at this point, hey, like there is a financial reality here that we don't talk about. Talking about money is not exactly the sexiest thing to do in an industry that wants to create a real experience, right? So here we are. Yeah, she's right. She's absolutely right. And it's time to maybe build a little bit more margin into things when things go back to quote unquote normal.
That means asking people to pay more?
It means explaining to people why they should, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Because if you ask anybody to pay more, if something becomes a commodity, it's going to be bid based on price. If it is really about the experience and supporting people that you love and people that you trust, then it becomes a different conversation.
Yeah, I take that point. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You planning to go out to eat, and are you willing to pay a little bit more to make sure that there is that support for those who've been hurting in the restaurant industry? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. And yet, Chris Grocki, through all of this, knowing that this industry has struggled in certain ways, you know, you're the owner of the historic German house. You're doing events, you know, you're doing weddings, et cetera. But you also have this, I mean, you have this idea of maybe getting back into the daily restaurant business there. Does that get on hold now, or how do you view that possible dream as connected to the German house?
So, great question. And, you know, on both sides of that, obviously, events are frozen right now. We've done the same as Janine just mentioned. We've been kind of pushing everything through April, May, and now to the end of June. We haven't moved to July yet, but we fully anticipate being required to. This, obviously, all of it affects every other piece of it. We were supposed to be, you know, putting a little bit of money aside in order to do a full remodel of the restaurant space down below the historic German house. And yeah, I can't wait to get back into that. We fully anticipated that financing and planning and building would take 2 years, but you know, that's going to continue to be moved further down the road. And if we incur debt during this time, we're going to be servicing debt instead of putting any money aside. So yeah, there's a domino effect here. There's a greater economy. I mean, the restaurant and event business affects so many different portions. There are purveyors and vendors on the food and beverage side that go all the way back to, you know, simple little agricultural estates. You know, you've got a lot of people that depend on this industry, the kind of tangential industry to everything that's going on here. Yeah, there's going to be some dominoes.
So let me read some feedback from listeners that have been coming in that shows a little bit of a cross section here, and I think the differing views. Josephine says, go out to eat? What kind of a society will we have? Do we have to wait for a vaccine before we get our lives back? Quarantine the sick? Let those who are well go about our lives. Elise says, this is a hard no from me. I will support my favorite local eateries, but not yet by sitting down inside them with other people. Mike says, yes. Yes, go out to eat and don't use gift cards. Restaurants need the cash right now. And Eric says, writing to us from a different country, he says, Evan, answering from a different continent, but yes, it is getting to outdoor seating weather, and just about every restaurant in Lille, France, has a large amount of seating out on the sidewalk. We usually go on weekdays and early. 6 p.m. is crazy early for France, when there are fewer people, but yes, and especially outdoors. Okay, so let's hit that point. Jonathan Swan, is there an opportunity this summer at least, this year at least, during a pandemic, for restaurants to do everything they can to get more people than ever outdoors eating?
I guess you're limited by your venue. You know, if you have a patio, if you're lucky enough to have that, then sure. Yeah. I think all my venues, try to do the most with the weather that we can. I think that's common throughout Rochester. I think we're all starved for the sun every spring. And, generally speaking, my patios tend to fill first in the summertime. So that's not a concern if we open up. I expect those to be pretty vibrant spaces quickly.
Okay. Janine?
Back to the 6-foot rule as well. We've already mapped out expanding our patio into a couple parking spots that we have out front and possibly taking part of our idle loan to cover that, to basically extend our dining room and to the outdoors, which I think most people probably feel more comfortable eating in an open air space with plenty of space between tables, so that's definitely on our radar to do.
Chris Grocki, would you be expecting to see restaurants get creative with space to get more people outside?
Just creative with space in general. It's important to, you know, recognize that square footage in a restaurant, the amount of chairs really is what drives all of the revenue projections, right? So to everyone's point here, when you eliminate capacity by 50%, in a dining room, and plus you're not just talking about 50% in a dining room, because now you're not allowed to have people at the bar, and maybe that's another 5, 10, 15 seats depending on the restaurant, which can be another big hit into capacity. You're going to have to get creative with these things to make those numbers work. And again, I really want everyone to understand the math that plays into this. Like, restaurateurs very rarely kind of ask for help. Everyone just wants to be paid a fair wage and a fair price for the product that they're giving. But it's really important to know that, you know, no one's making it your problem, but you can definitely help when it comes to continuing to do takeout with a place that's opened its dining room too, which is a whole other topic.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we'll make sure by the end of this hour, we're going to ask all three of our guests, you know, what do you need from customers and the dining public? And we'll make sure we've got time for that. But let me continue to work through listener feedback. Charlie says, open streets can offer more space like patios. I appreciate that, Charlie. I'm thinking of Geneva, and I've mentioned before, my favorite street in the whole Finger Lakes region is Linden Street. And I love when they've been able to close it down to traffic, and it feels, you know, sort of like an old Europe feel, and you've got tables out on the cobbles there, and people are outside, and you can do events out there. I would not be surprised to see discussion, especially even in places like Park Avenue. I don't know, John Swan. I know this could be controversial, but what if you closed Park Avenue to car traffic for the summer and turned it into one giant patio and pedestrian space?
Oh, that's my dream world, Evan.
Oh, okay. All right. Some people wouldn't like it, I know.
I'm sure the neighbors wouldn't like it. And I doubt that there's... I mean, they've canceled the Park Avenue festivals. That's out in August. You know, the chance of this kind of thing happening in reality, it's not practical. It's not a long-term solution. And I appreciate, too, the ideas. I mean, all those ideas are something that will probably hit all of our heads. But the reality of the situation is really, really difficult. The lifelines that we've been tossed are not adequate. In fact, they're stacked against industries like us and other industries that weren't able to keep staff on and had to do layoffs. You know, this is kind of an insurmountable thing. We're all going to be hit really hard, and it's about who's going to survive. Creativity is kind of out the window. You know, hard work's kind of out the window. It's when's this going to end? When's the virus going to go away? When are we going to be able to just go back and live our normal lives? It's kind of a waiting game more than anything else to me.
Well, John, let me ask a question from a listener regarding employees, because she heard you mentioned employees who right now wouldn't come back to work even if you asked them. She says, would employees be more willing to return to work if they were making a living wage? If they're earning more on unemployment, chances are pretty good they weren't making a living wage in the first place. I'm always willing to pay more to support places that are taking care of their employees. That's from Amanda. What would you say to Amanda, John?
Well, I think there's a general misconception, with regards to what restaurant employees make. You're talking about an entry-level position in a lot of cases, and I think that's the only position in a restaurant that's really relevant to the quote-unquote living wage. Servers in my restaurants tend to make somewhere between $25 and $32 an hour. That's pretty good, in my opinion. They tend to only want to work 20 to 25 hours a week. That's also pretty good. They tend to be very young. There's a lot of misconceptions here, and I always get a little touchy about the pay concern, because it's very unfair, and I think people tend not to know the real facts of the matter. So I would argue it's a competitive business in entry-level positions in a lot of cases. Of course, I want to be able to pay more. This kind of goes back to the margins. Currently, I think industry average is somewhere around 40% of your income goes to payroll. And I mean, yep. Find another industry where that's true. So I have a little difficulty with that one.
Yeah, can I comment on that as well?
Yeah, go ahead, Janine.
It has nothing to do with the unemployment. People that are on unemployment, we pay them much more. It's the extra $600 a week that they're getting that we can't compete with through July 31st. You also have to remember a lot of restaurant employees are part-time. So let's say they're used to making $150, $200 a week. Now they're making $750 to $800 a week. I can't pay someone that works two shifts to do that. So it has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with unemployment. The $504 maximum that you can get, all of our employees make more than that, based on the number of hours they work. It's this extra $600 incentive that everyone on unemployment's getting. The nurses aren't getting it. The grocery store people aren't getting it. People that are working aren't getting it. But everyone on unemployment is getting this extra thing that wasn't in a stimulus check. It's an incentive for them to stay on unemployment.
All right, so just briefly here, in our remaining minutes, I want to work through a couple more listener questions. I want to make sure you all have time to describe the help or not from the government relief and also what you would want from the public. But Mark writes to say, Evan, I would pay extra to feel safe if waiters are in PPE. Chris, you mentioned that it's going to be up to restaurants to make sure that, customers feel like they're doing the right things. Should we expect that whenever restaurants for dine-in service open this year, we're going to see staff wearing masks? That's going to be part of the deal. What changes do you expect?
You're going to see changes, but there's going to be a balance to be struck between obviously being incredibly conscious of safety and, making decisions that are going to promote the most safety with the least impact on the experience, which is going to continue to be important. You cannot operate a restaurant in a clinical environment because no one's going to feel good about that, right? You're not going to feel comfortable. You're not going to feel inspired to go out. We work so hard to create that beautiful experience, which is a tough thing to manage when you've got infrared thermometers and people in full PPP at the door, taking temperatures. And how do you enforce, like, ma'am, you have 102 temperature, and sir, you're okay. Like, ma'am, you can't come in. There's a logistical problem here that's going to have to be faced for sure. And it's part of this whole process. Yeah, I'm with John. This is something we would just, we want it to be over instead of having to be creative about these things. It's just a matter of what do we have to do in order to make sure that everyone is A, safe, and then B, comfortable.
All right. So, John, let's try to do this in about a minute here. First of all, you said government relief hasn't really worked for you. If you were designing relief right now from the federal level, what would it have looked like?
I think it would just been a direct payroll infusion. don't give us requirements on, you know, how to spend the money. I mean, it could have been just here's the payroll. If you really want people off unemployment, like this is supposedly designed to do, give us that money to give to the employees. Give us money to pay ourselves as owners too, to keep things afloat. Make less barriers to getting people back into work.
Okay, Janine?
Yeah, I think if I designed the bill, I would have taken maybe a six-month snapshot of our rent, our utilities, our health insurance, and our payroll, and that's what it should have just been a direct shot and cover to cover those main costs for a little while.
Okay, Chris?
This is a tough one because I don't know that there's a great answer to it. There are so many ways that a system cannot work for certain parts of the entire populace. We really do need to not disincentivize people to come back to work. That's the biggest problem. We've already addressed it. People are definitely being incentivized to stay at home right now. And that's a really tough thing to be able to earn more, even in a part-time job, like Jadine said, by staying at home. That's the principal problem with, and that's not federal, that's more on the state level here. But again, I don't know that they foresaw that when they were passing a fairly generous aid package.
All right. John Swan, what do you need from your customers, at least in the short term right now?
Oh, just keep eating out. Let us prepare your meals like you know we can, and the gift cards definitely help. All that kind of stuff has been really, really great. Show of support for us both financially and emotionally.
And people are still can still get gift cards from all your locations. Is that right?
Yeah, we have all the information. We update it once a week, pretty much on our main page, SwanFamilyRestaurants.com, as well as every single page that we have online, links there. So you can see where you can get gift cards. They can be generated electronically and distributed that way as well. And all of our schedules for delivery, pickup, and whatnot at every single restaurant is there too.
Okay. Janine, what do you need?
Just everyone to stay positive. The takeout support is huge, particularly Wednesdays and Thursdays for us would be really helpful. The weekends are strong, but our Wednesday, Thursday business is a little bit slower. Gift cards, you know, people writing reviews, just staying positive about our business and letting us know that they're going to be there when we're allowed to reopen.
And at the historic German House, Chris, what do you need?
Well, one, we're going to have to be able to do events at some point. That's super important. But once that day comes, we'll just need everybody to, right now we need our clients to kind of have a certain amount of circumspection about the fact that we are going to work incredibly hard on making sure that things can happen. They won't happen perhaps on the same schedule, but we'll work with you, your vendors, absolutely everybody to make sure that we get things in a good place.
Let me close the hour with an email from James Elkin in Geneva, listening on WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio. He says, Evan, thanks for always delving into the relevant issues of the day. I opened Microclimate Wine Bar 8 years ago, the Linden Social Club 4 years after that, Monaco's Coffee a couple years back, and my family owns and operates the Left Bank on Linden Street and the North Farm in Geneva. To have my health and to see my friends and family stay healthy has been the singular most important focus these past weeks, and for that I'm grateful. But for the rest, I just don't know, period. Does society need those of us who do this? The existential question posed by Gabrielle Hamilton is not a new one to anyone putting their dreams and ambitions on the line, opening a restaurant or a bar. Technically, no, the world doesn't need us. Society can survive without us. But how exciting would that be? How much joy do the places we socialize in bring to the world? How much is that worth? These are the places we fall in love with each other, romance over food and wine, tell fantastical stories, get drunk with happiness. No one needs us, but we are a better world because of us, all of us. The patrons and proprietors, cooks and servers, bar backs and tenders, the whole lot. Linden will come back. I'm not sure if we will. Many thanks for your part in keeping the dream alive, though. That's from James in Geneva. James, thanks for listening, and we're thinking about you, and good luck to you. A fitting coda to the hour here. Jonathan Swan, good luck to you and your family as well. Thanks for making time, and hope to see you in person sometime soon.
Excellent. Thank you for having me, Evan.
Janine Cachette, owner of Avino on Monroe Avenue. Janine, thank you for taking the time and good luck to you.
No, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
And Chris Gracchi, I know I'll see you soon, whether it's at the historic German House or elsewhere. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you very much, and good luck to all the restaurants out there.
You got it. Rob, Megan, Emma Ray, I'm Evan. We'll talk to you tomorrow.